What is up, everybody? My name is Ian Allison, and I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you very much for listening. I'm doing a solo show again today. SBL asked me to do another one of these, and you know, it's so funny. As I was thinking about, God, what do I want to talk about today? I was asking my wife, Emily, I'm like, Em, what should I talk about in the solo podcast? She was like, well, what did you do last time? I said, I did a Q&A and I answered a bunch of questions. She said, why don't you talk about your COVID pivot? And I was like, what? And she was like, you know, like how everything changed for you during COVID. And I sort of like stopped and I wondered to myself, did it? And she's like, yeah, it did. And I thought, God, you know, like I still feel like a bass player. I'm still like a working bass player. But I think what she was referring to is just the amount of content that I have started to make and starting to work for SBL and just thinking about myself maybe as more than just a gigging bass player, thinking about myself as having the ability to be a personal brand. When I say that, do you want to like run screaming? I remember when I started to think about that, like, oh, I wonder if I should think about myself, Ian Martin Allison, as a brand. And I would like throw up in my mouth. And then the more I thought about it, the less I would throw up. And then the more I thought about it, I would like start to not throw up. And this all started before COVID. And so I wanted to talk to you guys today about the things that I think are so important about thinking about yourself as something great or something worth doubling down on, right? Doubling down on you. And, you know, I could say like, oh, everyone is wonderful and everyone has something to share. And yes, 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 all that sentimental crap is fine. But I'm going to give you today some of my very personal stories and thoughts and actually some tangible advice on what you can do to foster the next step for you, whatever that is. I assume if you're listening to this, you're probably a bass player, probably certainly a musician, right? And so if you want to take that next step, if you want to pivot from your day job into full-time musicianship, I don't know what it is for you, right? But if it's, oh, you're thinking about, I want a side hustle. I want to do more music. I want to work with more people. I want to play on sessions. I want to go out on the road. Whatever it is for you, I'm going to give you some tangible steps today to do that. And these are just the things that have worked for me. Okay. And so funny, like when my wife says pivot, so I go back to that and I think, I don't know that I really pivoted. But then as I think about it, yes, absolutely. I turned 40 and about 3 years ago, and I had a midlife crisis, or as my friend Peter would say, I had a spiritual awakening where I thought, okay, I had been a band guy. Right. From all through my teens and 20s, the entire decade of my 20s, I was in a rock band. And then the entire decade of my 30s, 30 to 40, I was sideman, side musician, playing for all kinds of different artists at the whim of an artist tour schedule and album cycle. And when I turned 40, I wanted some kind of control, at least like the illusion of control, because what do we ever really control? Right. Nothing. But I wanted to feel like I had some control and I wanted to start to make some decisions of my own. So what I decided to do was to start to take social media really seriously and start to really dig into Instagram, try to build a community, try to build an audience and really give them value instead of thinking about like just promoting myself. I wanted to talk about the things that I love and talk and give people pedal settings, right? And, you know, talk about techniques and just really decide that it's okay to be me. I think that's honestly one of the hardest things that you can possibly do is be you on the internet unfettered, unfiltered. I mean, like, I don't know, unfiltered. Everybody's got a little filter going, right? But like, decide to be you. Put your vulnerability out there, right? And be you on the internet. That is hard to do. And it's what I really decided to try to do about 3 years ago. So when COVID happened, I had already positioned myself. You know, I was out on the road doing this tour with Eric Hutchinson, and it got cut down and all the gigs went away. And there was a day that I actually thought to myself, I looked around like my little studio at all of the bass guitars that were sitting in my studio. And I actually had this thought, and it was serious. It was, maybe these would just make better firewood. Like in the coming apocalypse. I mean, that might sound ridiculous. And yes, I'm a child of the 80s, raised with like dystopian sci-fi movies. And yes, my old man, Bob Allison, you know, would raise me talking about black swan events. And oh, don't even Google that. So sad, and civil wars and stuff. So I came up and I have this, I'm an enthusiastic, positive person, I think, but I do have this dark heart of like, uh-oh, the end is nigh. And I really, really got in touch with that at the very beginning of COVID. I thought, maybe music is over, and maybe all of these instruments would just like, you know, make better firewood or better like zombie skull crackers. I mean, I really thought that. I wish I could say that I'm like, oh, I didn't actually think that, but I really did. Like, I was like, which one would be the heaviest to smash a zombie? The Thunderbird certainly would be the best, like, zombie head cracker. And then, you know, things started to mellow out, and you know, the text messages started to come through about doing some, you know, some stuff. But boy, because I had made the decision to take social media really seriously, I was in a pretty good position to, as my wife would say, pivot and start to be thinking less about like, oh, what's the next tour that I'm going to go on, and start to think more about like, what's the next video I'm going to make. I think that's probably what she's talking about. So I want to talk to you about a few things for me that made that very possible. Again, I was looking for something else. I was looking for a new avenue. Not that I want to stop touring and stop playing on records. I mean, that stuff has just increased, if anything, since the beginning of COVID. But I wanted more control, and I wanted to double down on myself. So the first thing I want to talk to you about is this idea that Justin Meldal Johnson talked about in a bass player. I don't know. It was like a live event that I saw on YouTube years and years and years ago, a masterclass that he did. And some of these things I've talked about on the podcast before, but this is going to be a nice collection of the tenets of Ian. Okay. And this first one is, if it's cool, do it. I'm going to say that again. If it's cool, do it. Someone asked Justin, hey, and if you don't know who JMJ is, Justin Meldal Johnson, an incredible bass player, incredible producer, played with Beck, I'm a Robot, Nine Inch Nails, produced records for Paramore, M83, etc., etc. He's a hero of mine. He is a smart, tasteful, incredible bass player, musician, producer, right? And he said this. Someone said, hey, how do you decide what to do or what to play on? Or if someone sends you a track, like, is it money for you? Like, what's your criteria for deciding if you want to do something or not? And he said, if it's cool, I do it. And it hit me. He went on to expound. I think that's the word. He went on to say, you know, that feeling you get when something is exciting, you know it right away. If you get that excited feeling, then that's the feeling you need to chase, even at the expense of money. Now, I know that we can't all just do cool stuff all the time and not worry about money, but if you can, If you can focus on doing something that you feel excited about, it will lead to money. You know why? Because say someone says, hey, can you play on this for no money or for 50 bucks or whatever it is? And it's cool and it's exciting to you. And you say yes, and you kill it because you love it, right? It will lead to other artists will check that out, right? Maybe that artist will get signed and get a budget and right. It leads, it has legs. I think actually that doing something that you are excited about, the least valuable piece of that is the money that you'll receive, is the $100 or something that you may receive from playing on somebody's song. You'll get reps in the studio. You will have an opportunity for a relationship with an artist, or if it's someone you've known for a long time, a deeper relationship with that artist. And if it's cool, chances are you'll probably do a really good job, right? And then maybe they will call you, text you, DM you again to do something later down the line. It's the lighthouse for me. It's the beacon. It's my North Star. And it's interesting because Scott and I have talked about this a lot on the podcast, and his is not that. His is not sort of like, oh, if it's cool, I do it. He has goals. He's writing goals. He's setting goals. I mean, and he has built the bass empire. Well, you know, I mean, I am in my spare bedroom. So, you know, maybe don't listen to me, but I will say my trajectory has been a little bit more leaning into, the things that are going to make me very happy. Not to say that starting a big business doesn't make someone very happy. I know that Scott is very happy. I'm just saying, instead of me setting out at the beginning of the year, writing down goals, I've never been that person. And I sometimes wonder if I should be, but I haven't done that. What I've done is I've tried to surround myself with the right people and be in a position to where when someone says, hey, can you do this? And I get excited. I describe it as a welling feeling of excitement. When I feel that, I say yes, if I'm able. And it always leads to cool stuff. Now, you might say, if you're a little bit more business-minded or like Scott, you might say, that's sort of career in defense. And I understand that. I understand that. It's definitely not like, okay, I'm going to go out and I'm going to do X, Y, and Z to accomplish these goals. But that's where it started for me. And I have a little bit more offense strategy that I'll tell you about here in a moment. But it started with, do I get excited about this? Yes, I'm going to try to do it. No big deal if it's not a lot of money. In fact, there were some things in the beginning that I completely goofed up because I was like interested in money. I remember, there was an artist that was like, hey, can you do this gig? And you know, it's going to be two rehearsals and it's going to be this much money. And it wasn't much money. And I remember saying, well, no, because I am a professional, I require this much money. And the artist said, oh, shoot. All right. Can't afford that. And then I didn't get the opportunity to do it. And that artist is out there doing all kinds of amazing stuff now. Right? So, and I just thought in the beginning, I need to be a professional. So I need to make this all about money. And in the beginning, that's why I started with this one. In the beginning, it is not about money. It's about following what you love, and it is about you giving of your time. If you don't have experience, you don't have leverage. If you don't have a brand recognition in your name or band, you don't have leverage. Guess what you do have, though? Time. Time and energy to devote to something new, right? So in the beginning, if you're starting out, don't make this about money if you can help it, right? Try to make it more about doing the thing that you love, and it will lead to money. Now, also whatever, you know, you could be like, yeah, but I have three kids and I want to do music and I need to be playing these gigs. No problem. All good. I'm just talking about what I discovered about myself as being very, very true to me and what got me into the spare bedroom recording a podcast for SBL. But hey, there's nothing I would rather be doing. Nothing at all. I'm going to move on to number two. Number two, after you've followed the thing that you think is cool, and it has maybe started to lead to other opportunities. You've tasted a bunch of things, right? Maybe you've done a bunch of sessions, you've played a bunch of gigs with different artists, and you're wondering, oh, who am I? Here I am. I'm trying all these things. Who am I? The second tenet I want to talk to you about today is deciding that you are worth pursuing. Doubling down on you means discovering your voice. How do you discover your voice? So many ways to do it, right? And it is a long road and it is different for everyone. But I want to tell you, for me, it was about looking inward, peeling back the layers, and finding the thing that I felt vulnerable about. My good friend Jonathan Marin told me once, your vulnerability is your voice. That thing inside of you that you feel ashamed of, if it's where you're from, if it is your family, if it's the kind of music you liked, if it's relationships that you had, whatever inside that you're trying to hide, that's actually your shit. That's who you are. Is there a way that you can take that thing that you feel vulnerable about, that you feel shame about, that you feel scared of, that you're trying to hide from the world? Is there a way to take that thing and turn it out and point it to the world and say, this is what I got. This is who I am. Now, I don't know. Is that something about your playing? Is it a story that you need to tell? What is it, right? I can tell you what it was for me. For me, when I was trying to be cool session guy, I was not talking about the things I loved as like a young music lover when I was coming up. I wasn't talking about prog rock and metal and EDM and hip hop music. I was trying to just fool people that I liked Zeppelin and the Beatles and Radiohead, right? In the very beginning. And it was just awful. And I don't know that I really fooled anyone, but I definitely felt in the beginning like I wasn't true to myself on certain sessions. And I'm not saying that you're going to walk in and be like, all right, I only play a Babinga, Zerkoti, Wenge, six string made with the finest brambleberry appointments, and I'm going to play the slap and the tap. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about not trying to hide yourself. Obviously bringing the right thing for the gig or the right thing for the session, but not shying away from who you actually are in conversation and even in your influences and your playing. It's okay. It's okay that you are who you are. For me, what it was it was, I really liked playing these synthesizer sounds on the electric bass with pedals. I loved it. And I would qualify it. I would come in and, you know, if there was kind of an opportunity to do it on a session, I would say, can I try something? And it might be dumb. Oh God, the amount of times I said, hey, can I try something? It might be really dumb and it might be just a good placeholder for another person or a cool synth patch or, you know, giving a vibe for a good idea. But I just want, God, I did that so much. And I wish in some ways that I would have just not said anything and started to play a sound that I thought was cool instead of like, I don't know, but maybe this could, right? Because what I found is when I would do that stuff, 9 times out of 10, if I thought it would be cool, it was cool and it worked. And people are like, wow, dude, what are you doing? That's crazy cool. And I was like, yeah, well, it's not probably as good as like a real Moog sound or whatever. God. So dumb. It's because I was sort of ashamed. I wasn't sure that it was going to be accepted. I thought it was kind of like maybe it wasn't going to be cool. And then because I'm sort of a people pleaser, I guess I need outside validation and people would say, no, this is cool. And it would give me a tiny bit of confidence, right? Oh, okay. Maybe it is cool. And when I heard someone say, double down, find the thing that you're ashamed of and double down. And then I heard Jonathan Marin, my friend, say to me, your vulnerability is your voice. Ooh, it's powerful stuff. So what's the thing inside of you, right, that you feel ashamed of, that you feel like, I don't know that I want the world to know this. Is there a way that you can take that thing and make it who you are. Make it your brand. I mean, think about, like, if you've seen any of my content on SBL or on Instagram, I mean, that's essentially all I'm doing. I'm taking the things that I feel like I'm good at, which are, you know, finding sounds, transcribing synth bass lines because I like them, and playing them with a very simple setup. I mean, I don't have like a crazy amount of like, oh, I've got every synth pedal. And, you know, I sort of have like a octave pedal that I love, a fuzz pedal that I love, both by Three Leaf, actually. The octave pedal that was designed with Tim LaFave in mind, the Octaver, and then the Your Doom. It's called the Doom 2 now. And then some kind of like chorus or modulation inside of an HX Stomp. I almost don't even care what the modulation is. I just love the sound of chorus. There's a bunch that are wonderful. And then sometimes envelope filter. I suppose envelope filter would be third. Envelope filter either in the HX Stomp, Proton by Three Leaf Audio, or MXR makes some really good stuff. The bass envelope filter is fabulous. And then the modulation. So those four components, right? And I found that whenever I would string those things together and kind of use my ears to discover how to tweak them and kind of find the sound that I was looking for, it sort of sounded like me. And people would start to say to me, like, hey, can you do that like Ian Allison thing? And I'd be like, what do you mean? Like, please tell me what that means. Because it's crazy that you think I have a thing. What is it? Because in the beginning, nobody has a thing. Nobody has a thing. The person that you think, like, I bet if you found Mono Neon's very, very first videos, he's not in the outfit. He's not playing over Bill O'Reilly yelling on Fox News, right? He's probably playing cover gigs. He's probably playing September by Earth, Wind, and Fire, which is awesome. But it wasn't what he ended up discovering, right? So everybody starts somewhere. You have to just ask yourself, what's the thing that you love? What's the thing that you love? If it's cool, do it, right? Back to number one. Number two, doubling down on you. Your vulnerability is your voice. What's the thing about your playing or about you that you find embarrassing? Dig into it, right? I also want to talk about this in terms of being on camera. Right now, here I am, right in this little spare bedroom. And if you're watching this on SBL, if you're just listening to it, you're not seeing my face. But if you're watching it on the SBL website, you can see that I'm just talking to you into a camera, and that can be scary. And I mean, when I go back and watch the first videos that I made where I'm talking to camera, trying to present something, I think I did some stuff for Lakeland a long time ago, and I did some stuff for Dark Glass, the first fuzz pedal they made called the Duality. And I'm more muted because I'm trying to be cool, right? I'm kind of more like, well, the Dark Glass Duality is great because it's like I'm reading from a script, right? And so it just takes time. But I would really encourage you to, if you haven't had any experience speaking into camera, just try it. Think about something that you want to tell the world. And even if it's a little bit scary, can you think about something that you want to talk about? Put your phone in front of your face and try it. And if you do that and you put it out there, chances are nobody, well, somebody might hate it, but that's okay. A lot of people will probably like it if you really speak your truth. You talk about the thing that's vulnerable to you. You talk about your journey. And I know this can kind of sound cheesy. Even as it's coming out of my mouth, I'm like, oh boy, your journey, you know, and your vulnerability, your truth. And I know that it's already kind of cliche, that sort of like, you know, like on TikTok, people are like, oh, vulnerability and your truth. But honestly, if you can get it out and you can talk to face to camera, you don't even have to post it. But what if you just said the thing that you have always wanted to say? What would happen? It might change your life. It might. I think it did for me. And mine is so lame. I mean, mine is so nerdy. It's like, oh, like, I really like playing synth sounds on the bass guitar, but I thought it was lame to do. And now I'm going to think it's not lame anymore. That's essentially my whole platform. But it's led to a lot of good stuff. I mean, it's led to a lot of good stuff. So what's the thing you're scared about? What's the thing that you feel like you don't want the world to know? Is it appropriate to let the world know? Something to think about for sure. And then I want to talk to you now. Oh, this is the big one, about how to go about creating your own opportunity. So we've talked about, right, like, if it's cool, do it. JMJ saying essentially follow your passion, right? Essentially engage in the art that is exciting to you. The second part of that being then double down on you. What about you are you feeling yikes about or ashamed of? See if you can find a way to turn it out and see what happens. That's big stuff. But that all that stuff is sort of internal, right? And it's about getting comfortable with you. It's about know thyself, self-awareness. Also, let me just say this too. At sort of the midway point of the podcast, I'm not saying everybody can do this. I'm not saying everybody is good enough to be a career musician. It's not true. So I'm not saying be delusional. You have to work your ass off. And there are so many sacrifices you have to make. A lot of people like the idea of being a musician or an influencer or a YouTuber, right? I mean, that stuff sounds cool maybe, but a lot of people like the idea of it more than the actuality of it, or being an entrepreneur, right? People love to say, oh yeah, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm an influencer, I'm a musician, I'm a session bass player, right? All those things sound cool. But boy, doing the work to attain those things is very difficult, and it comes at a price, right? So part of this whole thing is I'm talking to everyone with the assumption that you're not delusional. You cannot pick up an instrument and in a few weeks be the best. You may have something to say. I mean, what about if you pick up the instrument and talk very truthfully about, wow, this is hard and my fingers hurt? That's great. That's true to you. You need to know thyself. It is about talking about where you're at, where you want to go, chronicling your journey, documenting the process, not flossing, not being bullshit, right? It's really about owning who you are. A great story for me. Check this out. In my mid-20s, I bought an upright bass. I'd played a little bit in junior high, high school, a little bit in college, then kind of put it had gone away. I'd never owned one. It was always a school bass. But I was teaching at a college in Minneapolis, and I had an opportunity to teach the upright bass. And I thought, well, hell, I'm going to buy one, and I'm going to get really good at it, and I'm going to teach this thing, and it's going to be awesome. And I was 24, 5, 6, and I bought an upright bass, started to study a little bit, and I got some gigs on it. I even got a really great opportunity to tour with it, but I was like, I had this delusion that I was going to be great at it. And I was not putting in the time. I just thought, well, because I'm really good at electric bass, I thought I was at the time, right? You know, I felt confident at least on that instrument. I didn't feel confident on the upright, but was taking lessons and making strides. And I will never forget, I went to see the Oscar Peterson Trio, and there was a bass player, I can't remember his name, but he was burning this, like, they started out, they came out on stage, it was Oscar Peterson, a bass player and a drummer. And I can't remember the other two guys, but they got on stage and Oscar counted this tune like 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, like burning fast and kind of quiet. And they started to play this head in unison together. And it was insane. Maybe a Parker thing. I'm not sure what it was because I am not as well versed in jazz as I would like to be. But this bass player was up in thumb position on the upright, murdering, straight murdering this part. And I watched that for about 7 seconds, and I immediately had two thoughts. The first was grief. I thought to myself, oh, I will never be that good on this instrument. And then I had this like sadness of like, why? Because I don't want it enough. Like I sort of want the finish line, but I don't love the process. I don't love playing the upright bass. I don't. I still don't. I didn't then. I don't now. I never did in the beginning. And I sort of had this like realization of like, oh, it was a real self-awareness moment. And then too, like, then the second thought for me was relief. I thought, oh, I don't have to be this good on this instrument. You don't have to do anything, right? But I had to put all this pressure. Oh, I need to do this. I have something to prove. And then I thought, oh, I don't actually need to do that. And then it was like, okay, what if I saw the upright bass as just another tool? What if I could get a decent sound and I could play in tune and in time in the open position, first position, and maybe second position? What if I got some real just basic skills together with the bow? I could play some kind of long notes and figures and use it as a session instrument. Bring it out on maybe a pop gig or a singer-songwriter thing, but not endeavor to be the world's best. I mean, that is kind of a silly notion, right? That's like a teenager notion, and it's awesome. When you're a teenager, I'm going to be the best. That's great for you. But into your 20s and 30s, are you? Maybe you are if you've worked really, really, really hard. But are you working hard? No? Know thyself. Know thyself. It's so for me, right? It was actually a really great moment because what it did is it let me then double down on the electric bass, which is my true love. Do you love what you're doing? What's the thing that you love? Follow that. What's the music that you love? Follow that. So this diatribe that I just went on was to say, I'm talking to people about self-awareness, because I'm not saying, oh, don't worry, pick up an instrument and you're going to be the greatest. It is fucking hard to do, right? But do you love doing the work? Do you love picking it up? Do you love playing music, right? Do you love practicing your melodic minor modes? If you do, that means you should probably shred some jazz. If you don't, it's okay. What do you like to do? Do you like to play repetitive hip-hop ostinatos? Great. Find an artist that's doing that and do that. Be the repetitive ostinato hip-hop person on the bass. Do that. What do you love? Singing over playing the bass? Do you love to sing? What if you become the accompanist? What if the bass accompanies your vocal, right? What do you love to do with the instrument? Do that. Don't let me, don't let anybody else tell you what it is that you should love. Know thyself. It is about self-awareness. Work really, really hard and then double down on what you love. Okay? How we doing? How we doing? I mean, I'm having a great time. I'm going to look at this last point here, and this is sort of, this is like the action step. Sorry to even use that term, right? But this is what I really consider to be like. So you're like, oh, okay. This is all very flouncy, right? This all could be sort of woo-woo, like, oh, double down on myself. Okay. Work really hard. Okay. Do the stuff that I think is cool. I mean, God, if I say it like that, it just sounds insane. Yeah, it's like these platitudes of work hard. but this stuff really is true. I mean, I genuinely love this instrument, the electric bass, so much that I remember writing down, when I was in counseling, I was in couples counseling with my wife, who was then my girlfriend, but we wanted to get married, you know, and I remember the counselor saying, you know, write down something that is like a career goal and then maybe a relationship goal. And I remember for my career goal, I wrote down support my family by playing the bass. And she said, don't judge it. Just the first thing that comes to your mind, write it down. And I did. And I wrote, support my family by playing the bass. And wow, that sentence was really, really revealing. Because first of all, support my family? What? Like, we weren't even married. But that told me that deep down, I mean, I always knew that I wanted to have children. I have two kids right now. I'm blessed. I hate using that word, but I really do feel that. I have two lovely kids, Everly and Dashiell, right? And I'm married to a lovely woman, Emily. I wanted that. Now, there's some people that don't want that, right? And it is difficult to do music and family, but it is also doable. I was then on the road a bunch, and I discovered that being on the road a ton, we discovered as a family that it wasn't totally the right fit. So I stopped endeavoring to, like, you know, pursuing artists that were going to be on the road 250 days a year. But in the beginning, writing that sentence down in the couples counseling, What is a career goal? Support my family by playing the bass. Wow. Family. I knew that I wanted that. By playing the bass. It didn't say by touring the world. It didn't say by being in my rock band. It didn't say by only doing these specific gigs. What it told me was, wow, I want to do both of these things. I want to have a family and I want to play the bass. And I want to be able to support my family by playing the bass. Now, that says my wife works too. I'm not saying like, and now, you know, I'm making a six-figure salary supporting everyone by playing the bass. But I'm getting there. It's ongoing. I'm getting there, right? And so for me, what that meant was a combination of things, right? Teaching, touring, sessions, playing, making videos, talking about gear, but all the while doing these things that I love and finding real joy in the diversity of the things that I get to do. Really, it's really interesting. That might be an action step for you right now. Take a pen and a piece of paper. Write down a career goal, just one. The first thing that comes to your mind. It does not have to be the same as mine. What is the thing that you want out of your career? Write it down. And then it will illuminate some things for you. Don't judge it. Write it down. Does it make you sad? Does it make you scared? Does it make you so excited? Know thyself, right? This last thing that I'm going to get into talking about today is creating your own opportunities. How do you create your own opportunities? So we've gone from this sort of passive defense mode of, you know, okay, if it's cool, do it. So wait around. Oh, what if it's cool and it comes along? Well, I'm going to do it. Doubling down on you. That's a little bit more active, right? You find the things that you like and then you go, hey, it's okay that I like these things. And you double down on that. You find your voice. Starting to be a little bit more active. Now, this next part is all about offense. Create your own opportunities. I'm going to talk to you about two specific ways that I have done that for myself. And then I'm going to give you at the end, really a tangible thing that you can do that could potentially change your life immediately. I say that and I sound like such a douche, but I actually believe it. I do. So check it out. The first thing that I want to tell you about is working for Lakeland. I was in my 20s and I was broke and I was playing in this rock and roll band and I was cleaning an apartment building complex. I was like an apartment manager, which is actually a great gig. I got to live for free. It was awesome. But cleaning like people's hair out of drains when they didn't clean their apartment, and, like turning over apartments, that was the worst. But I got a cool little apartment for free. This is before I was married, right? Before the family. And I felt like I wanted a nice instrument. I had started to play some of these Lakeland basses, the Skyline series, which were the ones that were made overseas and they were nice, but they made these like really nice US bass guitars. And I've always been a gear hound. It's like, if I could just have one of those, that would be amazing. I can't afford it. I mean, at the time, you know, I think $3,000 or $4,000. This was in the early 2000s. This was pre-YouTube. And so I thought, you know, I have access to a few of these instruments, the Skyline ones. Like, I had one and a buddy had one. There's a music store that had a couple. I'm like, I wonder if I could round these up. And what if I pitched to Lakeland a sound sample library idea where, you know, the user could go on the website and click on a bass and hear it. But not only that. What if you could click on a pickup and hear the neck pickup? Well, what if you could hear that also with round wound strings and flat wound strings? Wow. What if you liked metal? Would that be a track? What if you liked country music? What if you liked, you know, like, what does it sound like if you walk a bass line over a jazz standard? So I had this idea. I recorded with my friends, my rock band at the time, I recorded four genres. I think I recorded like a sort of a bad jazz example, a hard rock thing, like a punk rock thing with a pick, and then like a slap thing too, with all these basses that I procured. I didn't own them. I just borrowed them. And I got my friends to help me out with this project. And I think I ended up paying them a little bit of money down the road, but I sent it. You guys, it was a CDR. I burned a CDR and I sent it in the mail to Dan Lakin, a stranger. And then I think I tried to call him, or anyway, we got in touch and I said, hey, I'm this guy. Like, I'm this random guy. My name is Ian. I love your instruments and I have this idea for a project and I just did some of it. And I want to see if you think it's cool. And guess what? He popped in the CDR, checked it out, and he was like, I think this is actually really cool. And I was like, oh, great. And he was like, would you come to Chicago? And he's like, where do you live? I'm like, Minneapolis. He's like, cool, will you come to Chicago? And we can talk about this. And I said, yes. So my girlfriend, who's now my wife, Emily, we got in the car, Honda Prelude, rolled out to Chicago, met with Dan Lakin. And he saw that I, you know, could speak in full sentences or whatever. Because there's no video back then. There was no YouTube. And he said, yeah, I think it's great. And he said, so let's just do it with all the basses. I said, okay. And he said, and I think we should do more genres of music. I said, oh, awesome. That'd be great. He's like, let's do 10 genres of music. I was like, okay. So we did reggae, country, slap, hard rock, punk rock, a ballad, on and on. Right. And I'll never forget, like, I talked to some people. There was even someone at Lakeland who was like, oh, how are you going to account for, you know, Rosewood versus Maple? And I'm like, oh, no. You don't get it. The idea, my idea and Dan's idea, our collaborative idea, was that it's just going to be a way to provide a potential customer, or at the very least, a bass nerd, an enthusiast, with something fun to do, right? Do you want to hear a hollow body with flats on a hard rock thing? You think it's going to be cooler than you think it is? It is, right? So it provided this, an interface, a way for a website to have something to do on it. And it sold them a lot of basses. And then they ended up paying me in basses. And I was the happiest mid-20s version I could have ever possibly been. I got to build a few amazing bass guitars. Check this out. I even have one of them right here. If you're watching this, this was the first bass. This is a Lakeland Joe Osborne. It's their jazz bass. And I got to pick out all the specs. It's the bird's eye maple neck with black blocks. I'm putting it up to the camera so you can see it. It's absolutely amazing. And this was custom made for me in the like early to mid 2000s. And I mean, I could not have been happier. And I created that opportunity out of thin air. They didn't want it. They didn't know they needed it. And I was like, hey, do you guys maybe need this? I mean, and that led to then me doing other stuff for them. When YouTube was invented, I ended up doing a little bit of stuff for them. Then the company sold and I lost touch with Lakeland, but it was such an amazing boost of confidence of like, hey, if you have an idea and it's about, you know, I wanted this instrument essentially, right? But I also had this thought of like, what would make a website more fun? What do I wish existed? I wish that there was a website that I could, like, I was looking at all those models. I wish that I could go and just start playing, like hearing them, right? There's no stores that have all that stuff. What if I could click on something and I could hear the bridge pickup walking a bass line, then contrast that with the neck pickup? I wish that existed and it didn't at the time. And I made it exist. So here's something else. Think about the thing. This is anything in creativity. Think about the thing that you wish existed. Is it a certain type of music? Is it a certain type of product demo? Is it a sound that you want to make in a pedal? Is it a bass line on somebody's record? Is it an opinion? Is it a book? Is it your story? What do you wish existed in the world? Make it so. Make it so. When I first started out with SBL, you know what I wish existed? I wanted session bass players that I respected and admired. Sean Hurley, Tony Levin, Lee Sklar, right? Guy Pratt. All of these session players, Justin Meldal Johnson, Chris Chaney, to do a course where they took songs that they played on and talked about them. Some of that stuff exists now. But when I started doing content for SBL, my whole thing was, I guess I'm just going to do that because I wish that Sean Hurley made that course. I want to know what Sean Hurley was thinking about and why he chose this bass and why he played this thing on this Mayer tune, on this Vertical Horizon tune. I want to know why JMJ chose to play the PVT-40 versus the wall on this M83 tune. They're not telling me. It's killing me. But you know what? I can do that. I wish it existed. So there's probably some other people that wish it existed as well. So when I got an opportunity to do my first course with SBL, that's what I did. I just took the songs that I have played on in Minneapolis and started to talk about them. Here's why I played this bass line. Here's why I chose this bass. Here's why I stepped on this pedal, right? The SBL opportunity. So talking about creating your own opportunities, the SBL opportunity came from me deciding to take Instagram really seriously. And I loved Scott. I've loved Scott for a very long time, since the very beginning of him posting, like pre-SBL, just when he was Scott Devine posting YouTube videos. And I remember if there was something that I was doing that was like teachy or, you know, something that was sort of like base education slanted, I would just tag SBL. And pretty soon he started to pay attention. I was posting a bunch. And then there was a time where I wasn't posting for about a week. I took about a week off, not for any reason, but I just hadn't posted. And he said to SBL, everybody, this guy, Ian Allison, hasn't posted in a while. I'm afraid he's gone. Everybody right now, go follow Ian Allison. And he's going to wake up to a bunch of new followers and he's going to know that he can never leave us again. And I woke up to like 600 new followers, something like that. And it about doubled my followers at the time. I couldn't believe it. And it was so amazing. What a boost, right? To get something like that from someone that has leverage, that has a platform, that has a voice. It was a huge confidence inspiring thing for me. And then it was just organic. Then it was like Scott said, well, actually, I DM'd him after that and said, I love what you're doing. I'm good at X, Y, and Z, and I will do it for you no matter what. Like, I didn't say, here's what I charge, here's my rate. You know, I would have done anything for Scott Devine for free. Don't tell him that now. So dumb. But he's such a great guy, right? And so when he asked me to do a course, I mean, that's the first thing he asked me to do, and I was stunned. He said, would you do a course? I said, yes. He said, great, here's what I pay for a course. I mean, you know, he never tried to take advantage of me or anything, right? He was very, very forthright about here's what we do. Here's the pay. Does that sound good to you? And do whatever you want. What do you want to do? And I thought, what do I wish existed? I wish there were more session bass players talking about their journey, talking about how they play on songs, talking about why they make the choices they make. And that's what I decided to do. And the SBL thing just grew from there. That went well. Then I did some live stream stuff. That went well. Then COVID happened, and, you know, because I was already in a little bit. Then Scott said, hey, can you get to a studio and make some videos? I said, no, I cannot because everything's closed. He said, what if I send you a light? What if I send you, you know, and I said, and he's like, what if I send you a light and a tripod? Could you make some content yourself? And here I am, you know, but it was amazing. It was all because, like, if I wouldn't have taken the step to dig into social media and start posting about the things that I love, not be ashamed, talk very, very honestly about who I am, what I like to do, that I wouldn't be here talking to you. And I feel very grateful that I'm here talking to you, right? So what's that step you can take? What do you wish existed? Can you make that kind of music, that kind of content, that kind of product? What do you wish existed in the world? That's where the best stuff is born. What's the quote? Necessity is the mother of invention. I think that's the quote, right? That's what it's been for me, for sure. Last thing on this topic is my time with Corey Wong. So I have this idea. Well, no, I have 1,000 ideas in my phone. I don't know if you're like me at all, but I come up with a baseline. You know, I'll play something and I will then open my phone, the voice memo app, and put it in the voice memos. And then I'll feel like, oh, there we go. I was creative and it feels really good and it feels like really gooey. And I was like, oh yeah, I've been creative. That's great. And then they just pile up and I don't do anything with them because I'm a procrastinator, right? And it is hard to finish a song, just like it's hard to execute on an idea. You're like, yeah, we should do like the kayaking trip up to Alaska. Sounds great. Sounds great to say it. Are you gonna do it? Ooh, harder to actually do it. Same thing with creativity. It's easy to have a little riff and put it into your phone and then feel like, there, I've done something creative. And it's not a bad thing, but how many of those ideas are you finishing? How many of those get across the finish line? For me, it's hardly any. Hardly any. But I was going through my phone one day, this is pre-COVID, and I discovered this slap bass line that was sort of funky. And I love to slap the bass, but I find that it's not something that I'm not going to make a slap bass record of, like, I'm not going to hang my hat on that technique. There are certain bass players that do and crush. It's just not going to be me because I don't love it like that, but I do enjoy it. And it's sort of like it's a chameleon. It's like a compartment for me that I really enjoy, but I have a friend named Corey Wong, and before, I know that you all know who Corey Wong is, but you didn't always, because he was just like a regular guy. And now he's this freaking superstar, but he was just my friend. I mean, we would do sessions together, right? I mean, I shouldn't say he was my friend. He is my friend, but now he is on a different level. That dude is on a different level. But before he was on that different level, we were eating Chipotle together, playing music and, right, doing sessions. I did church gigs with him. I played weddings with Corey Wong before he was Corey Wong, the megastar. I had this idea, this slap bass line, and I sent it to him in a voice memo, in a text message. And I just said, hey, man, this sounds like you. I don't know if you dig it, but if you do, it's yours. And he got right back to me and said, oh, this is really cool. What are you doing tomorrow? And I said, nothing. And he said, well, why don't you come over and we'll write it? And I did. I went over to Corey Wong's house. We sat down. We wrote this tune. It had just an A section. We made a B section. He suggested a real simple B section. We did that. He played guitar on it. And then we went out to Chipotle, ate burritos, talked about having families and trying to do music, the struggle, the balance. And then I went home. And that song is called That's My Passport Photo. And it is on his first record, which is called Corey Wong and the Green Screen Band. I think it's the last track, but I made it on, baby. Oh, and you know, I mean, Had I never sent that little idea to Corey and been vulnerable enough to just send it, it never would have happened. So here is something that I want you to do. I'm going to leave you with this today on the podcast, faithful SBL podcast listener. Go through your phone. If you're like me and you have a million things in your voice memos, little ideas, little bass riffs, whatever it is, go through and find something that you like. Find your best thing. Find your best thing. Not the B-rate stuff. Find something that you think is cool. And then ask yourself, who does this sound like? Who do I want to send this to? Who would I be delighted if we collaborated together with? And for me, that person was Corey Wong, who is my friend Corey, right? If you send it to your friend, I'm not talking, don't send it to Ariana Grande. That's delusion. Don't send it to Ariana Grande. Send it to a friend that you believe in. Think right now about a friend that you believe in, that you think could be the next whatever. For me, that was Corey Wong, right? And I mean, I don't always pick a winner, but that is a winner. Think about that person. Who is the person in your orbit right now that you think is amazing, that more people need to know about, or that you just want to work with? And send them your idea in a text message late at night, early in the morning, whatever. And then say this: hey, haven't talked to you in a while, whatever. Maybe don't say that. You say this: hey, this reminded me of you, and I just wanted to send it along to see if it spurred any ideas for you. A gift. Hope you're having a great day. Bye-bye. With zero expectation of it turning into a big song about you getting royalty points, about, right? No, it's just, it's a gift. You give your best thing that you have written to someone. You give it to them. And you say, hope this spawns some creativity for you. And then what that will lead to could potentially change your life. It might lead to you playing on a record. It might lead to you playing with this particular artist. It might just lead to doing a fun project. It might just lead to a conversation in a text message, but it will lead to something. And frankly, I find that way of sending an idea so wonderful because there's zero expectation. You're not saying, ooh, I've got a banger that I'm going to send you. You want a collab? Yuck. No, you're saying, hey, this made me think of you and I just thought you might dig it. It reminds me of you. And it's a gift if you want to do something with it. Or if you'd want to do something with me, that would be cool too. No pressure. Have a good one. That's how you do it. And typically the surprise of receiving something like that is so endearing to someone that they extend themselves into it because there's no expectation, because it was a surprise and delightful thing that just came across their text. They might be feeling a little creatively dry too. And what if the thing that you send spurs them to, you know, they play it right away. They want to hear it. So they're not like waiting to listen to it. If you send somebody something like that, they play it right away. No one is like, oh yeah, cool. Thanks. I'll get to it. And like, if you're like, hey, this, you know, sounds like you, check it out. Kind of rough, but whatever. Like, no one is like, oh yeah, you know, it versus like, hey, I sent you my album to check out. Don't. No, I mean, whatever, sure, but that typically won't lead to anything. Like, I get people in my DMs all the time that are like, hey, you know, hey, check out this, my band, and check out my album, and check. And it's like, that is an ask. You're asking me to do something for you. I'm saying this is different. This is you giving a gift. This is you saying, no, don't check this out and tell me what you think about it and, you know, make notes on my album. No, this is actually, hey, this is an idea that you could use for you. And like, you guys, if I had someone send me drums, you know, it's hard. Drums are hard. And if someone was like, hey, I made this beat and I sent it to you. No pressure. Just thought it, you might play something funky over it. Guess what I would do? I'd play something funky over it. Versus someone being like, hey, here's my Bandcamp link. Check out my record and tell me what you think. Sometimes I do that, but honestly, that feels like work. It does not feel like a gift. It feels like an ask. And what I'm telling you to do is not do an ask. I think you need to do a gift of some music. Here, this reminded me of you. Hope you're having a great day. That's it. Zero expectation. And typically it leads to something. And if you do it a lot, like think about this, like, okay, so you do it one time. Maybe it leads to something. Maybe it doesn't. What if you did it 10 times in a month? I mean, think about what that could do. Now, it doesn't even have to be in a text message. It can be via DM, right? Like if you've made something and you want to send it to someone, you have it's a land grab right now. The access that we have to people on Instagram, on TikTok, it's a land grab. You have access to anyone. But what I'm telling you, know thyself. It's not about sending it to Kanye, right? It's not about sending it to the guys in Tool. It's about sending it to someone in your community, in your orbit that you believe in, that you think is amazing, right? That's what I want you to do. In fact, podcast is about to wrap up. So what if you did it right now? Like, what if you end this podcast right now and you go into your phone and find the thing and send it to somebody? What's going to happen? It might be course altering for you. So if you do it, let me know how it goes. DM me on Insta. Let me know how it went for you. Hit me up on the campus on SBL. I'm there too, right? Or hit me up in the comments here below the podcast and let me know how it went for you. I would be so curious to know if you found some kind of success, even if it just led to a coffee. That's cool. Because guess what? Guess what? We think this is about music. It's not. This thing that we're in, it's not about music. You know what it's about? People. This is not about music. This is about the relationships that you cultivate and how well you cultivate them. That's what this whole game is about. And then if you cultivate great relationships, chances are it's going to lead to great music, right? But you have to prioritize the relationship. And that is one tangible way of doing it. SBL, we did it. Thank you very much. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. So look, let me just go over this again. My wife is like, hey, how did you pivot during COVID? I'm like, oh, what does that even mean? And then I went in to talk about JMJ. If it's cool, do it. What does that lead to? Maybe doubling down on you, finding your voice. After you find your voice, you're on the journey of finding your voice. Then you start to create some opportunities for yourself. Give of your time and talents before you have a platform, before you have leverage. Before you have leverage, you know what you have? You have time. And you can say to people, I'm good at X, Y, and Z. I'm happy to do it for free. You can send someone a beat or baseline and say, this reminded me of you. You can call that. You can DM that manufacturer and say, if I can get my hands on these bass guitars, I can make you some really cool content, right? It's all doable. You just need to decide that you can do it, that you're going to do it. Be diligent enough to follow through and do not be delusional. Work really hard to achieve what you want to achieve in this business and in life and in your relationships. You guys, thank you so much for listening. I have been Ian Martin Allison, and this podcast is going to resume next week, potentially with another episode with Scott Devine and myself pontificating, being dads, talking about how little we've ridden the Peloton, and answering questions and digging into all things bass and life. So until then, cheers, everybody. Thanks so much for listening.